Welcome, everybody. You listen to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. My very special guest is Graham from Gold Now, formerly from Gold Now, actually. Graham, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Vinnie. Good to be back.
Yeah, it's been like almost a year or something since I last chatted with you, bro.
Oh, it's just too long. We should have got together before now, that's for sure.
If you say so. What have you been up to, mate? I see that you're looking a hell of a lot healthier than I saw you last time, mate. You got like really good skin, and you appear to have lost a significant amount of weight and stuff. What's going on, man?
Yeah, Vinny, I've discovered that being fat and ugly is not a good look for anybody. You understand what I'm talking about?
Oh my God, we just offended all the fat ugly people that listen to the show.
There's no fat ugly people surely that listen to the show. Oh my goodness.
Well, we could never be too sure.
I lost a lot of weight using stem cell nutrition. I'm very happy about it. I'm not happy about having closed down Gold Now, though, let me tell you. I'm not happy about that. I'm extremely happy about Edward Snowden. And I'm not so happy about the fact that I now realise I've been spied on for the last dozen years. And I'm still not sure exactly what I do on the internet is private or what isn't private. I have no clue. I don't know.
Here's the assumption. Okay. You've heard of Project Echelon, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So you know. If you know about Project Echelon, you know that everything you do is surveilled. Everything. Every text message, every email, every Facebook post, everything. Every form of electronic communication taken automatically without a warrant and stored in data somewhere, red flagged for analysis. And if they've got some kind of special interest in you because you exposed scumbaggery or refused to get a slave job or something like that, then they keep a little file on you. So, you know, now you don't have to worry. You know you're being surveilled. You don't have to be confused about it.
Do you know what? That's the most healthy attitude I think you can take. I think everyone's got to assume that they're being surveilled, and that's the way it is now. And the good news about that is that you can do things, and you can plan things, and you can make things, and you can generate things, and you can sort your life out in such a way to minimise that surveillance, on you. So it's kind of like all the fear has gone out of it, and anybody that's in any way dodgy or in any way kind of fraudulent, dodgy, or doing something just very bad, then they know they're going to get caught sooner or later. But I think it depends on what government, what side of the government they're on at the time. I don't know. It doesn't seem to work with normal people. Normal people are out there. They're nice people, you know, like you and me. We're nice people, aren't we, Vinny? We're very nice people.
Allegedly.
So the issue is that you're a bit of a stirrer. I mean, you know, I'm a stirrer too, but,
The difference between me and you is I publish everything that I do, so it doesn't really matter whether or not they spy on me because they could just watch my YouTube channel like everybody else, bro. You know, I say let them watch, you know. If you're going to watch me, I'll show you some stuff that will freak you out. I'll show us in front of the Child, Youth and Family Services offices with a 100-watt megaphone with two other activists that have exposed that you've got pedophiles and frickin' methamphetamine dealers working in your office, okay? You want to watch that, boy? We'll do that.
Well, it depends on who they know, whether they're going to get away with it. You know what I'm saying? If they're on the right side of the tracks, they're going to get away with it. And if they're not, they won't. And that's the bottom line, you know. But I'm very happy in a way that I now know what Edward Snowden told me. And I just assume everything's being tracked. And it's the same thing that for me, though, that I felt like I had my ways and methods and things that I did that, you know, I thought, you know, I wasn't doing anything wrong, by the way. I don't do things wrong. But, you know, I was doing things in such a way that I thought that I was private. You know, I now realize that, you know, I was just joking myself and just completely, you know, what was I thinking? You know, and I could just see the various departments laughing at my attempts to stay private. And everything I did, which was, you know, everything I did, which is everything I did, was like subject to public scrutiny. Well, certainly by the powers that be, the scrutiny, the guys that want to, you know, look at me or look at what I'm doing and what have you. See, I've got no fear about going on the internet now with my face and my camera. I don't care. I just don't care. You know, I think if you're targeted, you're targeted. That's it. If you're not targeted, you won't be. And who knows what the criteria is for that. Certainly being a criminal doesn't make you a target. There's other things that make you a target.
No, that makes you an employee. Oh, mate, this guy's a criminal. We should give him a job, mate. He is. It'd actually be something that I wonder. Wait a second. Actually, the United States police force is actually doing that now. They're actively looking for violent criminals to recruit.
Oh, okay. You know, I thought, like, I applied for the job once with the government and I didn't qualify because, you know, I think I smoked marijuana back when I was 16 and therefore that disqualified me for a job with the government. I don't smoke marijuana now, by the way. That's by choice. I would if I wanted to. I've got nothing against it. In fact, I think it's healthier than smoking cigarettes. But I don't smoke marijuana now. I don't want to. I don't need to. I think that people, if they want to, they should have the right to do that. Anyway, I don't know how I got on that stupid subject.
Well, you know, this is just the old paranoia of the government. And really, I think it's quite interesting about open-mindedness. And allegedly, that's what cannabis is really capable of doing, is keeping people open-minded. It stops them from being closed-minded to a large degree. It gives them more cannabinoids within their system, which allows them to evolve. It's in fact kind of the building blocks of all your cells and everything are in fact endocannabinoids, cannabinoids from within. And so people who haven't learned anything for the last 20 years are cannabinoid deficient, allegedly. Oh. You know,
I wouldn't know about that. I used to smoke dope because I used to enjoy it, but I.
Well, there's a reason why people enjoy things is because it's actually not that bad for you in a lot of cases. But, you know, anyway. What I find interesting is that they'll kick you out for having smoked weed like 20 years ago. Why didn't they kick Bill Clinton out of the presidency? Why didn't they kick George W. Bush out of the presidency for driving drunk? Well, I mean, like, well, you're applying for a government department job. What kind of department job was it?
I can't remember now.
Who cares? Who cares? They're all freaking saving it, you know.
I was just going for a job. I just wanted to make some money, you know, buy some food for the kids. You know what I mean? Actually, no. It was before I got married. It was years before I got married. Anyway. Yeah.
Well, this reminds me of my mate Gavin. He tried to apply for a job for the Australian police, and he had a really high IQ, so he failed because he got too many of the questions right. And they said, "Oh, sorry, you're too intelligent to be a cop. Get out of here."
I applied for a job at the Australian Police back in 1975.
Yeah,
I just wanted a job. I thought I'd be the smart in the world, so I told them that. I went for the interview, and the sergeant said to me, "You're a half inch under height." In those days, you had to be 5'8", and I was 5'7½". And he said, "You're too short." And I said, "By how much?" He said, "Half an inch." I said, "Well, look, let me sit the test, Sergeant." I said, I'd be the smartest copper in the force. Let me tell you, I'd be up there, right up there. No one would be smarter than me." He said, you cheeky bugger. He said, "All right, I'll let you sit the entrance exam." Anyway, about a month later, he called me back and he said, "Look," he said, "I'm surprised to tell you, but you did actually pass. So we've decided to invite you to join the Victorian Police." And he said, "I think you should, you know, come in. The next entrance intake is about 3 months." I said, "Well, I'm ready now. I've got a suitcase in hand. I'm ready to move." I said, "By the way, where did I get?" He said, "You come second to a girl." I said, "What?" And in those days, I used to be, you know, Manly, you know, stuff. But I said, what? I can't believe that. And he said, no, you did. You come second to a lady. And she got invited, and we're going to invite you too. And I said, all right, well, thank you very much, but I'm not going to be ready because in 3 months' time I'll be in New Zealand. And I went there. So, and then I went down to the just where you work, actually, not far from where you live. I went to the police headquarters there. And I said, I walked in there, you know, swaggering in, said, hi, guys, I'd like to apply for a job. And I said, are you a bloody Australian? And I said, yes. And I said, sorry. They wouldn't let me in because I was Australian. Now I thank God I didn't get in. Oh, my God, it was a hard job. But
the old saying, it's like when you immigrate out of New Zealand, if you're an intelligent person and you go to Australia, you raise the IQ of both countries. It works both ways.
Yeah. I've heard that too, yeah. So, yeah, New Zealand's very nice. I like, you know, I married a New Zealand girl. I'm very pleased and all my children were born in New Zealand. Mm. So, not that they live there anymore, but they're all there. Actually, one does live there.
Yeah, well, New Zealand's kind of like Waiheke Island, where I grew up. It's a nice place to visit on the weekends, but if you're stuck here, oh, God, do you turn into a loser.
I used to
No offense to all the other New Zealanders who don't frickin' travel or do anything outside of this frickin' country and sit in small towns for your entire life working at a gas station. No offense to you.
Well, I like to. Are you saying people in Waiheke Island are pretty strange? I like Waiheke. I used to fly into Waiheke when I was doing my flight training out of Ardmore and other places in New Zealand when I was learning to fly Cessnas and so forth. I love
Try being a teenager there, bro. Try being a teenager there. That's well, all you I could always say.
You could always take the boat to Auckland or somewhere, couldn't you? And
go right. For like $50 now that they're charging for a return ticket, and that's if you're a child or goodness knows what. It's like I remember when I was just after I got my conviction for selling weed when I was like 19 down in Dunedin or whatever. Only job I could really find was a labouring job down the kind of like the viaduct, you know, Auckland, maybe like a 10-minute walk from the ferry. And it started at like 7 o'clock in the morning every day. So it meant I have to catch the ferry at 5:30 in the morning every morning and get home at about 9 o'clock at night. So I got about maybe 2 hours to myself before I had to go to bed and then get up and do it all over again. And at the end of the week, with ferry charges, after doing 50 hours work, I'd wind up with $150 in the hand.
Oh, wow. Oh, wow. So no wonder you were bitter and twisted as a teenager.
No. This is after I finished kind of, you know, my first year of university. It was in my when I was 20. And during a teenager, just doing high school at Waiheke, man, it's just, I don't know, maybe that's just high school in general, when you realise that all of the people that you're hanging around with, you wouldn't actually ordinarily want to hang around with, but you're just doing it because you don't want to be alone, and you're all talking, losers, and you never see them afterwards.
And you're talking about the teachers as well.
I would say so. I mean, yeah. It's just kind of like...
I hated school. I went to school in Australia, and let me tell you, it was the worst time of my life. I was bullied. It was just a shocking. I've discovered that a quarter of all children going to school have the same, result, have the same effect. It has the same effect on them. I'm a great proponent now of homeschooling. And if I had my way, my grandchildren would be homeschooled, but my children think I'm very weird by wanting that or would like that to happen. I think homeschooling is the only way. I think schools, in my opinion, are just bully pits. They're just breeding grounds for bullies. And I'm talking about teachers as well as students. I really had a bad time when I was at school. I was voted most likely to fail in life at would you believe, when I left the class. And I felt like a failure, and I was a failure because of the fact that it was just a horrible, horrible scenario. I now realise it wasn't me that was the problem. It was the stupid school system that was the problem. But it took me 40 years.
You failed at being a loser, you failed at being stupid, and you failed at being a slave. You unsuccessful bastard, you.
I haven't been employable for about 20 years as a result.
But, I've been employable for 6 years, you know.
I can see that. I can see why. You're a rebel. Yeah.
Well, it's just like I can think, you know, and it's like when you're working for somebody, the last thing they want you to do is think, you know, because they want you to just do, you know, don't think, don't worry, don't concern yourself, don't suggest things to the boss and so on and so forth of ways to improve the company, because you get real pissed off with you and say, it's my company, my ideas, I don't want any other people's ideas in here. I have the monopoly on all domination and creativity. We're coming to break, and we'll be right back after that one. Ladies and gentlemen, do not go anywhere. Divided we fall. Unity, please don't desert me. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Graham, what's your surname, bro? I forget after all these years.
Graham Kelly.
Graham Kelly, that's the one.
That's right.
I'm sorry, man. Like, I'm really kind of not that onto it today because, like, last night I was doing a big public meeting sort of thing, and I've started to notice that if you're there for 2 and a bit hours-ish, and you haven't got any water on you, being in a room with so many other, like, I think there must have been thousands of people there, maybe 5,000 or 6,000 at this public meeting, and you get really badly dehydrated, man. And then when you're up, late trying to, you know, import the footage and everything like that, and go to sleep, oh mate, just brain just gets scrambled. On top of that. That I did three protests in 3 days, as well as doing 3 shows on those 3 days as well, and getting all the videos finished. Yeah. Well, you know, it was like putting up a little donation thingy on my Facebook. So, you know, please, ladies and gentlemen, if you can donate to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, it's all paid for by donations. Every single thing you see here is paid for by donations, okay? And unless, of course, you know somebody else who's done 3 protests in 3 days and a public meeting and 3 shows at the same time, who's more worthy of your donation dollar, you know, go and donate to them instead. They don't exist, not in this country anyway. And I wanted to also mention that what's really frustrating for me as a proud conspiracy theorist, who believes that powerful people actually desire power, more power, you know, that kind of thing. If you're not a conspiracy theorist, apparently that just doesn't make sense to you. Look, powerful people wanting more power, that doesn't make any sense to me. It's because you're a coincidence theorist, mate. I think everything happens by sheer coincidence. You know, it's all accidental. It's all accidental, you know. And what's frustrating is that when we go to these things like the GCSB bill meeting, which is like, you know, passing the, more or less, it's the NSA taking control of the United States, New Zealand's state surveillance services, so that the United States, through the PRISM program and all of the, isn't it interesting how they call it PRISM, which rhymes with prison? I don't know. And maybe there's a Freudian slip.
Yeah.
But what really frustrates me as a conspiracy theorist is that all of the commentators on this particular topic, even though the New World Order surveillance state agenda, we've been talking about it for years and years. Some people have been talking about it for near on half a century. It is now so bleedingly obvious in your face that it's part of the New World Order agenda, and not a single fracking one of these commentators even mentions the words New World Order or tries to tie it into the global scheme of bringing out about a one world government, one world surveillance state, one world scumbaggery dark age that will last forever. None of them. People argue that, even the people who know this, they argue, maybe people just aren't ready for it. We're going to gently push them into it. It's like, no, there's not enough time for that. I mean, the only reason why the New World Order agenda is getting away with it for so freaking long is because people are too freaking afraid to expose them. Stop being afraid. Start telling the truth. Who cares if people ridicule you for it?
Yeah, I think that ridicule, if they get ridiculed, though, I mean, most people, they could tolerate being ridiculed. I think it's that they're more worried about getting a drone on their head. You know what I'm saying? Certainly Pakistan people are interested in surviving. I don't think that drones on the head is a good solution. Certainly they don't think that. But, these days... You know, it used to be a theory, this conspiracy thing that you're talking about, but now it's known and talked about. And you were talking about it, and other people in, you know, the States and various other countries are talking about it now, but they tend to think of it as if you talk about state secrets and what have you, end up being a whistleblower, or at least in that, you know, realm, and therefore you're then targeted by the serious, unfunny people. You know, when we went into Honolulu once, we got harassed by the TSA. I couldn't believe it. And I said to my wife, we're not going to go back there. You know, we used to go and live there and stay there for up to 3 months at a time. In those days, I thought I was a private individual. But I now realise that we were fully, we were self-employed, but we weren't slaves. But, yeah, subject to the system, big time. But I think all of us are subject to the system now. You can't avoid it. The good thing is for us is that the Snowdens and the Assanges of the world have made it, obvious to us that we're in that mode. And I'm happy about it from the point of view that I can deal with it. I didn't know once before, but I now know about it, you know, so... Thank God for people like Assange and Snowden. They've got bigger testicles than me, though. Let me tell you, I wouldn't be doing what they do. I don't think I'd be happy to do that. But still, the horse has bolted, and let's now change things, you know, or live our lives in such a way that we can tolerate that the horse being bolted. I think it's a good thing, actually. It's a good thing to know the reality of what's going on with governments versus the population. Because obviously the population are the victims, the people in the countries. I mean, they talk about the 99%. I think it's quite accurate. 99% of people are victims. They haven't got a clue what the heck's going on. So, the ones that do know, they're the conspiracy theorists, but it's not a theory anymore. It's actually reality. There's a conspiracy out there, and it's actually a reality.
So what I want to do is just take the meaning of the word back, you know, because a lot of people, conspiracy theorists avoid using the word conspiracy because it makes people see them as conspiracy theorists. And it's just, I just want to take the word back, yo. I want to make conspiracy and conspiracy theorist common usage and refer to conspiracy theorists highly as respected individuals who aren't frickin' brainwashed slave scum.
Like some people want to take the word gay back and use it the old way. You know, yeah, I've had a gay time. it doesn't necessarily mean a queer time. Not that there's anything wrong with queers. I've got very good friends and customers that are queer, and they admit it, and they're out of the closet, and I like them. They're good people. But having said that, you know, I mean, I don't prescribe to being gay in that way, but that's okay. I can have good friends that are gay, and that's good. I do have good friends that are gay.
It's actually a good catch net to have friends that are gay, because that way, if you ever talk about gay or something, everyone will like start instantly trying to label you homophobic and go, oh, hang on.
Uh-huh. I used to be homophobic. I used to be homophobic.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I definitely used to be homophobic, but anyway, I'm not now.
Thank oh well, that was no. It was the 70s, bro. Okay, it's the decade of its own excuse. Yeah, man, you did it. You did acid, and you had sex with like seven different men's partners. It was the 70s.
Well, I never did that, but anyway, I did other things. I did other things, but not that.
I did other things.
I'm living in England at the moment, Vinny. So I think I'm catching some of that English accent. How am I going? How's my English accent going?
It's not working.
You'd never make a politician with it at all, I can tell.
I'll take that as a compliment.
You're supposed to say, oh, you're doing well.
I can be diplomatic if I want to be, you know. It's like, this is another thing that's very interesting. I had a man named Tara O'Khan, very great speaker, knows a lot about technology and waste removal and things like that. You know, I've spoken at the Monsanto March. He says he supports me and he's going to start donating, even though he doesn't agree with the kind of yelling and screaming sort of thing that I do. And what's interesting is that since that Monsanto march, I've had a spoke to Lisa Eyre, who was the leader of it, and I've stopped doing all the yelling and screaming and that kind of thing, and started, you know, dressing up in suits and things like that, and trying to look a bit more respectable and acceptable to the general slave population. And what occurred to me is that this is actually the way to get through to people. People don't respond quite as well to somebody who's, you know, angry and raging all the time. They respond to somebody who already fits into their willfully accepted paradigm, somebody who looks acceptable and speaks with, you know, reverence and calm and cool with information and stuff like that. And, you know, you have a look at these last videos that I've put up from the protests that I've been to, you see a very different Vinnie Eastwood.
Right.
And I think it's been much more effective too.
Very interesting. One of the things that I had to do is close down Gold Now digital currency exchange, gold-based currency. The reason for that is that I had to, with these new laws, I had to basically dob in my customers and tell the American government about their specific and every and each and every transaction. So, yeah, exactly. And the other problem I had to report to 16 different agencies, and they didn't have a facility where I could have a drop point. In other words, let's say Vinnie Eastwood come onto my website and bought $100 worth of gold, digital currency. If you lived in the States, or even if you didn't live in the States, but you were an American person, you were born in America, you had an American passport, I had to then report your activity to the 16 different government departments. But I had to report each and every one of your transactions to every one of those 16 departments. So it was, frankly, I couldn't afford it. I couldn't afford to run my business anymore because, you know, to toe the line and tell them, those 16 departments, that you were buying digital gold currency, how much for what your intended purchase of it was for, or a whole range of, and if I didn't do that, I would then become a target for the American / banking system. And we've been targeted for many years. We had Gold Now running for 14 years, and it was a successful business until the bank started closing my bank accounts in the 30 countries we were doing business. So, but there's always a way around that because bankers are stupid, you know, and politicians are even dumber. The end result was we kept the bank accounts in those 30 countries, but they kept continually changing the rules and changing the rules and changing the rules until eventually I can't deal with Americans, whether they live in America or whether they don't live in America. So the end result was it was half about business and we had to make a decision. Okay, and I don't want to tell any government about any of my customers. The other thing I particularly got annoyed about was one of the new rules that they had was that we had to start collecting tax in advance on their transactions. So, and this is one of the problems I had with the VAT-type taxes and GST-type taxes is that if I was in business in one of the GST or VAT countries, I had to then collect that tax and give it to the government. And they made it a law that I had to collect that money for them. So I didn't want to do that. I didn't want to be a tax collector. And, well, more specifically, I didn't want to be a tax collector and not get paid for it. You know, I've got to be honest here. If they'd paid me good money, I would have considered doing it. But, you know, because, you know, you got to put, you know, you've got to have bread on the table and you've got to keep the wolf from the door. So I tended to keep, anyway, the upshot of it is I stopped doing business with Americans. That was half my business gone. And then some big banks, the big 10 of them, there's only about 10 banks in the world that matter. And they closed some of my accounts and caused me ruction and problems. And then I had the various governments interact into my life, and I thought it's just not worth it anymore. I'm not going to do that anymore. So my $500,000 a month business turned into nothing eventually. Innovative is that?
Yeah, I think that's the problem, and everybody's ranking off them. In fact, the only people who've been granted rights recently have been gay rights. Isn't that interesting? Everybody else gets their rights taken off them. We'll be right back after the break, ladies and gentlemen, at thevinnieusualshow.com.
Come gather around, people, wherever you roam.
Welcome back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. So, yeah, final segment of the first hour with Graham Kelly, formerly of Gold Now, digital gold currency trading. And what's been happening in terms of your health has been in no small part due to your consumption of stem cells from good old StemTech, hasn't it, mate?
That's for sure, yeah. It made a big difference in my life, Vinny. A bit surprising, really. I got called by a doctor one day, and he told me about this stuff. And he said to me, look, he said, your health's going to improve by taking it. And I didn't believe him. I thought he was a bit of a snake oil salesman from New Zealand. You know what they're like in New Zealand. And anyway, he said to me, look. So, oh, hang on, Vinny, you're a New Zealander, aren't you?
Hey.
Well, you know what they're like. Anyway, he told me about the stuff, and I didn't believe him. I thought he was a bit of a nutcase, and so I avoided him for about 7 months. Anyway, after 7 months, he rang me back, and he said, are you avoiding me? I said, yes, you're a snake oil salesman. You're preying on sick people, and you should be ashamed of yourself. And he said, I'm a doctor. That's my job, to follow people who are unwell. He said, you are unwell.
That's quite funny. Oh, you're a snake oil salesman. You're preying on sick people. I'm a doctor. That's my job. The truth comes out.
Anyway, I cut a long story short. He said, I'm going to send you this stuff in the mail. I said, yeah, okay. So he sent it to me and I went on it. And amazingly, the product apparently doesn't heal anything. All it does is release your stem cells. And when your stem cells get released, your health improves. It's the most amazing thing I've ever seen in my life. There's no healing in the bottle itself, per se. It's, all it does is just does one thing. It does it really well. It just releases the stem cells in your own body. And apparently they're locked up because of various reasons. People have got problems with their health because their stem cells, which is nature's intended way, or if you're a Christian-type person, it's God's intended way of healing people. And I didn't know any of this stuff. All I knew, I was a bit sick. I had a whole range of problems, and so did she, who must be obeyed. Anyway, she, after she saw my results, and she said, look, I'll try them too. So we've now, we're both on the stem cell nutrition product. And in addition to that, I've got both of my sons went on the product, and they had vast health improvements. My granddaughter had huge improvements, like stunningly effective improvements. And I've now got 1,900 customers around the world in about 30 countries. And it's 23 countries. I've got customers and distributors in those countries. And they're all, the majority of whom got their health back. So it's an amazing, amazing story. To tell you the truth, Vinny, I gave up my digital gold currency business and I'm now full-time in my stem cell nutrition business. And we've gone to the UK. We're currently in England. And let me tell you, there's 60 million sick people in this country. And I find them every day. So I'm actually out there hunting for sick people. And I find them everywhere, and we get them on stem cell nutrition, and they amazingly, because of their stem cells now being activated, they amazingly got better health. And I talk to a bunch of people every day. Most people don't believe me, but there's crazy ones, they do believe me. About one in 10 believes me, and they go on the product, and sure enough, their health improves massively. So we're having a massive impact in the UK. We've had a big impact in Australia and New Zealand. So we've left. But, that's how it works. I mean, it's just the most amazing thing. It's truth to tell, I didn't believe the doctor guy when he told me about it. I thought he was just a nutcase. I said, you've been smoking too much of that green stuff, haven't you? And he just laughed. He said, no. He said, I've got a solution.
I've only smoked enough.
So, I'm a doctor. It's my job to chase sick people. So, he was a great guy, and I like him very much. I really much appreciate him now because, him and his brother work with me and our teams of people in New Zealand, Australia, and now America and England and Ireland and Bulgaria and Pakistan. And we've got customers everywhere in India and Japan and everywhere, and they've got nothing but better health. So it's just the most amazing product. I'm quite gobsmacked about the whole thing still, even after 3 years.
Mm-hmm. And of course, no mainstream medicine company or hospital or anything like that is using this or prescribing it or anything like that, is it?
No, although having said that, I've got a local doctor in the UK. She went on the more specifically, she gave it to her husband, and he recovered from his illnesses and all of the illnesses, not just one of them. So she's said, "Look, sign me up, but I want to provide some of this stuff." So she's a doctor in the UK. Obviously, name won't be mentioned. She's one of those radicals doctors now, obviously. My husband, we're current. But I've got six other doctors that are customers as well in Australia. Funnily enough, they all had high blood pressure. They all don't have it now. So, I mean, it's the most amazing product I've ever seen. And certainly we're not this is not a pharmaceutical product. It's a non-pharmaceutical product. And it's available. You just go to my website and get some. But it's available in 23 countries. But the thing of it is that the product itself doesn't heal anything. I've got to reiterate this because it doesn't heal anything. All it does is it causes your own stem cells to be released in your own body. And that then in turn, all stem cells are designed as master cells. That's what they are. And what they do is they run around the body and they fix things. They fix your everything that's wrong. The only thing it doesn't fix, as far as I can ascertain, is teeth. So it doesn't. Sadly, I had a $5,000 dentist bill recently. But, you know, it doesn't fix teeth, but it fixes everything else. And my wife.
What about stupidity? Does have you given it to somebody who's an idiot and then they actually become smarter as a result?
I noticed you say that with a grin on your face. We actually had a guy in Australia, in Sydney, who was mentally retarded. I won't mention his name, but he's a nice guy. He's been a friend of me. He's been buying digital currency from me for years. And he rang up one day, and he's slightly mentally retarded. He's not vast. He can drive a car, so he's not, you know, stupid per se, but he's certainly mentally slightly not quite the full quid, I think we would say. He's a lovely, lovely guy. I really like him, and I've been friends for years, and he's been a clever years in the digital gold currency business. Anyway, one day he rang up and he said to me, he got talking to me, and I told him about this stuff. He said, Graham, you're looking younger. One of the other effects of stem cells is once your ailments go away, you start, apparently the stem cells start rejuvenating you, and much to my amazement and shock. So he noticed that because he knew me for many years, and he said, "Graham, you're changing. You're looking. What's happened?" I lost a lot of weight. I lost 70 pounds without dieting or exercising by using stem cell nutrition. Anyway, so he said to me, "You've lost a lot of weight. You look really good. What's happening?" So I told him. I told him what I was doing, and he said, "Oh, I want some of that." But he was because he was mentally retarded, he was not able to work. And because he was not able to work, he was on the pension in Australia and on the government dole out, you know, the sickness dole out thing that they have. And he said, "I'll save up the money," which wasn't an expensive product. It wasn't an expensive, it's not an expensive product, but he said, "I'll save up and get a bottle." And he did. It took him a month or so, saved up the money. I think it was about $50 or something. And he rang me one day and said, "I got the money." And I forgot about the conversation, and I said, what do you want to do with it? He said, "I want some of that stuff, that stem cell stuff." I said, "All right." So I, wow, cool, I got another customer. So he went on to the product, and would you believe, and it's hard to believe, but he actually recovered from his mental retardation. That was the most amazing thing I ever seen. He actually became a normal person. He rang me one day and he said, I've got my brain back. I didn't pick up what he meant. He said, "I've got my brain back. I'm not stupid anymore." He said, "I can think now and I'm asking all the right questions." So he rang me one day and he said, "I went to the local church," and he said, "I had two girls invite me to go out with them for coffee." He said, "Do you think I should take them out at the same time?" I said, "Obviously stem cells are not working in that area." "No, don't take them out at the same time. Take them out one at a time." But because he was able to hold a conversation, he actually recovered his brain, I guess, and now he's got quite a large amount of income, or growing amount of income. He's joined me in the stem cell nutrition business because no one else would take him in the other job. So we signed him up as a distributor, and he became a director recently, and he's making good money every month, and it's growing because a lot of his people are getting results and referring back to him, and as a, because it's a multi-level marketing type organization, Vinny. So, you know, it's like Amway, but it's the same concept as Amway. You know, you talk to 10 people and get them on the product, and they talk to 10 more, and they talk to 10 more, and so on and so on. So I've got 1,900 customers now, and it's growing like Topsy. And the income's going up. But more importantly than the income, we're actually getting people well. There's about 1% of people tell me it doesn't work, but the other 99% tell me it does work, and they're very happy to be on it. So it's a bit unusual. It's a new concept. It's new technology. And,
by the way, unfortunately, we're coming to break now. Ladies and gentlemen, if you want to speak to Graham about getting some stem cells for yourself, you look up the stem cell nutrition on the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. Graham Kelly, thank you very much for coming on the show, and we'll see you after the break, ladies and gentlemen. and love. A little bit of harmony. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com 5 days a week, 10 a.m. till midday in New Zealand, 5 till 7 central in the United States, 6 till 8 eastern, 3 till 5 pacific, and if you're in the Uber Kingdom, 11 till 1 o'clock in the morning. And good old Graham's getting himself some Betty Buy time now. And we are going to our next guest now. We have Mark Howitt, named after the Howitzer. Mark, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me on.
Could you tell us a little bit about yourself and who you are, what it is you do?
I'm a documentary filmmaker, a musician. I'm the founder of the World Public Union. And basically, I'm on something called the March of Freedom right now, where I'm traveling across eastern Canada. I'm walking wherever I can. I've had to take some rides on major highways where it's illegal to walk on. And that was also used to get myself to certain cities where there was seminars set up where I was doing public speaking arrangements. So I did have to get rides to the highway, but I'm almost done that stretch now. When I get to Montreal, I'll be walking from Montreal to the east coast of Canada to the ocean. And I've talked to thousands and thousands of Canadians, countless Canadians. And I've also been talking with people around the world online for many years now about the problems that we face. And I'm trying to gather people's concerns. And I'm doing a reality show under the same name called The March of Freedom. And I've documented tons of videos, tons of conversations, interviews, just the experience that I've been through. And I've got a lot of people's concerns. And it seems like a lot of them are common. You know what I mean? A lot of people have common problems. They know what's wrong with the world, and the problems that people are saying that they know about are pretty much similar. So that's a good sign, right?
And do you have a website there?
Yes, the website is worldpublicunion.org. That's the only website I have going right now. And I am looking for other people to help with that website, to contribute news articles and stuff like that. So it's very hard to do it all on my own, and especially while I'm away from home, not on the internet a lot and stuff. So,
yeah, we I remember that we had a bit of a conversation on Facebook about trying to get you on to some Wi-Fi so you could actually do this interview. And it appears that you're incredibly busy. And indeed, one of my listeners recommended you to come on the show because he feels that you're doing one of the most important things for Canadian sovereignty that anybody's really ever done. And can I ask, what motivated you to get out there, be the documentary filmmaker, and actually start this organization?
Well, the World Public Union started in 2011. It was in between a couple documentaries I made. I came up with the idea, and that was essentially to give the power back to the people, to give the voice back to the people, because politicians and corporations and banks are not listening to the people. They're serving their own agendas. They're doing their own things that do not benefit the public. And when people do gather around the world, you know, even locally, their voices aren't heard. They're falling on deaf ears, and their concerns are not being addressed. So the World Public Union was a way for a group to start locally in the community, so that there is a group of people that are essentially going to keep the government in check when they do pass laws and legislation that don't benefit other people. Then there would be a group locally of activists and like-minded individuals that could actually do something about it and share resources and work together to make a positive difference locally. And then the World Public Union also works together globally. So all these communities, when there is groups there, they can share ideas, strategies, tactics that they've used to benefit their concerns, essentially.
What's your stance on taxation?
Taxation. Well, there's a lot of problems in the world, and all of it seems to boil down to money. That's one thing I've noticed, and a lot of people say that on this journey. They say, I wish I had enough money to pay my rent this month. I wish I had enough money where I didn't have to work two jobs to support my family. I wish I didn't have to pay my taxes this month because the taxes are shorting me out. You know, there's a lot of people that are concerned about monetary issues. And to me, taxes are just a way to get more money out of the people. I know that some of the tax money is used for municipal and community programs like fixing roads and such like and such things like that that are necessary for the community. However, we don't really get records of where this money is going. They usually keep that stuff secret, withheld from the public. You're meant to pay your taxes. And if you did the math, there's billions and billions and billions of dollars that are taken from the people through taxation. And that's what I feel about taxation and money altogether. I think money is the root of all evil. Money is the problems that's causing divisions around the world. There's people starving in third world countries, and there really shouldn't even be a third world country. That term shouldn't even exist. But if one person along this journey brought this to my attention, if there is a third world country, then what is a first world and second world country? Like, it really boggles the mind that there is such division in the world, despite the year that we're living in and the technologies we have and the communication we have. There's the internet, which connects us globally, where ideas are shared very quickly. And it's unbelievable that people have to fight, for example, March Against Monsanto. Millions around the world gathered on a single day to protest genetically modified foods, and they're still creating genetically modified foods. So that is absolute proof that they're not listening to the people's voice.
Yeah, indeed. You know, I led the march for Monsanto down here in New Zealand. I mean, the organizers were just like, okay, we've had our speeches, it's raining, so let's disband. And a whole bunch of people came up to me and said, Vinny, you know, we came here to march. Can you lead us? And it's like, well, yeah. and it's just
a lot of people seem to need a leader, right? They seem to think that they need a leader, which is also boggling my mind, because we should be our own leaders. I think we should take responsibility for ourselves and our own actions. And that's really going to help once people get over that I need a leader mentality. I think people will take control themselves and we'll see a big difference.
Well, it does help if you're the only one with a 100 watt megaphone.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Your voice would definitely be louder than others with that technology. Yeah.
Well, that was where I came up with the Monsanto opera. He was like, Monsanto, you suck, bro. And we had a lot of fun. Interesting what you're saying there about, you know, people wish they had more money for this. They wish they didn't have to do two jobs. They wish. And that reminds me of a movie called The Island. And one of the clones says, you know, what's God? And he goes, well, you know, when you close your eyes and you want something, you wish for it. God's the guy who ignores you.
Yeah, well, a lot of people do pray. A lot of people think that God's going to save them. And if they think that, they keep thinking about with that mentality, it's the same thing as putting your responsibilities on a leader. You're expecting somebody to save you without doing anything yourself. And that's not how the world works. I know that if I'm going to walk across the street, that takes my decision to move my legs to get me across the street. God's not going to get me there. And that's what we have to realize. Like, I don't find there's anything wrong with religious or believing in God or believing in a creator or a higher spirit or anything like that. To each their own. But there comes a point where you do have to take responsibility for your own actions and realize that the choices you make today reflect the actions that will be seen tomorrow. So,
Speaking of which, I had a concept about what the new taxation scheme should be. And, you know, I was asking people, have you ever been asked to pay your taxes voluntarily? No. So it's forced, right? And so if you're 100% taxed, you know that you're a slave. But what percentage of forced taxation does it take before you think that you're not a slave, you know? And I was like, okay, well, here's a good taxation system, at least I think. A checklist. So you send people a sheet, and it has like a whole bunch of boxes to tick about what they want their tax money to go on. So you have everything on there, you know, healthcare, roading, foreign wars, government limousines, military, militarized police, tasers, mace, etc. And you know, people could just tick what they want their tax money to go through. And I think that if you actually sent that out there, most of the things that we don't like in society, surprisingly enough, won't get any funding anymore, and so they'll just disappear.
Yeah, Well, we don't have that option, actually. They tax us and they use the money for whatever purposes they feel necessary. And oftentimes, it doesn't benefit the people. It benefits corporations who are fracking, who are taking the oil, who are taking minerals out of the earth so that they can make profits off what we need to survive. And essentially, we're working. The money funnels up into a pyramid. The people in the bottom are the ones working. And all that money that we're making and all the resources that we're taking and our jobs and all that stuff funnels to the top of the pyramid. So you have to, it just funnels itself up to the top, to the round table group that's at the top, because we all know there is one. Just look at the Bilderbergers, look at the CFR. There is groups out there that do exist that are designed to shape world policy and decide what's right for us as human beings. And I find a big problem with that. I have a big problem with that personally. And the scary thing is a lot of people think that the Bilderbergers are a hamburger brand. You know, they don't know who they are. They don't know that there is a roundtable group of powerful individuals who are the tops of corporations and media and government. So it's really been good doing this March of Freedom to teach people about things that they weren't aware of to begin with. But it's also good because I'm learning a lot from other people. And that's equally rewarding for me, is to not only spread the truth and make a difference in a local community or with a certain individual, but it's also really rewarding to learn something from other people. And I've learned something from everybody. It doesn't matter who they are. They could have no job. They could be a labor union's worker. All different kinds of people that are teaching me different things just from their perspectives. And I find that's really really good on this journey where I'm actually out there and physically in the public talking to people from all different kinds of communities. I've definitely learned a lot, which is good.
It must be quite empowering.
Well, I just feel like it's the right thing to do. I'm not doing this for my own purposes or anything like that. I'm doing this to spread awareness and to hopefully unite people all around Eastern Canada and all the communities that I go through. So that they are aware of some of the problems. And it's really interesting because when I talk to a lot of people about the problems that we face and a lot of the things that people will call conspiracy material, when I talk to them about it, you can actually see it in their eyes. Their lives change in a moment, which is really awesome. I really think that when I see that, it feels like I'm doing the right thing. And I've seen it, like, their eyes just changed. They're like, whoa, like, they never thought of life that way, or they never thought of it that way before. So it's the perspective thing, I think. Once they hear a different perspective that they can relate to, it can hopefully give them a bit of topic and subject matter to go home and think about when they get home. And then they would spread that information to their relatives, to their friends, to the people at work when they go to work. So it's that kind of thing, I think, that's really making a difference in what I'm doing. And it makes it all worthwhile. So
now I've seen a number of videos from. Can you turn your speakers down just a little bit there? A little bit of feedback. I've seen a number of videos that have been posted online, and even things like, say, Jay Leno or whatever, where they go around, they ask very, very, very simple questions just off of random people in the street to measure how dumb they are. And sure enough, their stupidity levels are just off the frickin' scale. And when you watch it, it's two things at the same time. It's really funny to see how stupid people are, but it's also really depressing because you realize what a deep ignorance hole society has gotten itself into, which is why I applaud what you're doing, is because you're not going around trying to prove that everybody's an idiot. You're actually going around and unwittingly proving that there's so many intelligent people out there from which you, even though you know a lot, can still learn off.
Oh, absolutely. I think I try not to use the word sheep because that's a common term that people like to throw around, sheeple. I don't think it's their fault. I think it's the media's fault for not covering these topics and not telling people what's going on. That's the bottom line right there. You have the media being controlled by the government and the corporations, and they're choosing what the people can hear on their news. And a lot of times it's negative, depressing news. And it certainly has nothing to do with problem solving. It's always discussing the problems, but there's no solutions. They don't offer the solutions. They don't even bother to think about it or debate it or discuss it even. And that's, I think, where a lot of people are getting lost and where someone might say somebody else is stupid or something like that because they're not educated enough on these issues. And that, I believe, has to do with the media, definitely. The media needs to start doing the right thing. So if you're in media and you're listening to this and you're watching, please do the right thing. Please start telling people about what's going on and stop protecting governments and corporations and serve the people. Because that's you are people, too. You're working a job. And is your job really worth it? Like, that's what I have to ask them, you know? Are you really doing your job or are you doing somebody else's job or following somebody else's agenda? So it's great that there's independent media like you guys out there covering these topics so that people can get a chance to learn what's going on and hopefully make contacts, connections, and work together and find sources for information on these important subjects.
Yeah, and it's interesting you should mention the word sheeple because I was just thinking about that this morning. You know when you're kind of like you don't know whether or not you're waking up or you're still dreaming sort of thing? Like that's that sort of witching hour real early in the morning. And it's just like we've got to stop calling the people sheeple, okay? That's one of the words the elite use, okay? Yeah. To call an ordinary person one of the sheeple is like calling a black person the N-word. In my opinion, you know, it's like a form of discrimination against people who, there's so much division everywhere, all the time. You see it wherever you look. You know, they're always talking about this, that, or the other issue to try and divide people, and I'm just not buying it anymore, man. And we all bleed red. And we're all freaking slaves at the end of the day, you know. It's just like if you're not a slave, try going and ordering a police officer around at a protest or something like that. He won't follow your orders, even though he's your employee to a large degree, you know.
Exactly.
I mean, come on, just people that need to accept that the New World Order is real and that we're all slaves, okay? And from there, then. That's the realization. It's pretty harsh. It's pretty difficult to deal with. But from there, you can then start solving that problem. We'll be right back after the break, ladies and gentlemen, with Mark Howitt coming to us live from Canada. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Oh, yeah, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. Mark Howitt, the Howitzer, is my guest. Welcome back, sir. Can we talk about some harsh reality for a moment here? Because very few people get into being an activist to the point where they sacrifice most of the time of their life. Usually without something bad happening to them. I was wondering, did something bad happen to you? Or was it just kind of like an informational thing? It's just kind of like you did your research, you suddenly realized what was going on, and you went about trying to change it.
Yeah, that's essentially what happened, really. I've been making documentaries since 2000.
Well, Mark, we seem to have lost you there.
No audio?
Yeah.
Can you hear it now?
Yep.
Okay.
Sorry,
cool.
Go ahead.
No problem. Yeah, that's basically the gist of it right there. I was doing documentaries since 2009, researching information about global issues, secret societies, global corruption, things that were going on behind closed doors, and how it was affecting humanity. And I was digging deeper and deeper, and I was going deeper into the rabbit hole as a result. And I was learning about all sorts of things. Then I got involved after I was researching and making the documentaries. I got involved locally, doing local activism. When the Occupy movement started, I was actually the person who started the online group to get everybody together for Occupy Sudbury. But after I started that, I kind of backed out of there. I took myself off administration to get other people in there. I did that because I knew that they would probably target me or have me on a list or something like that if I was doing that stuff. But then also March Against Monsanto, I was heavily involved with the local events there and assembling people and getting a good movement going there. in my own community. So I was doing activism and stuff like that. But with the documentaries and all that stuff, people were learning about stuff and they did agree with a lot of things I was putting in the documentaries and films. But there was no change. There was nothing being changed. There was nothing being done about it. And I decided to do this. It was an idea I've had for a little while, actually, but it kind of developed over time. I had time to sit on it and think about different ways to do it. And the reality show aspect only came in like right before I left. And when I left, I didn't tell anybody I was leaving. I didn't even post it on my wall. I didn't tell any of my friends online, nothing like that, because I didn't want anybody, the NSA, let's just say, to be looking at my Facebook messages or emails to say, oh, this guy's leaving, this guy's doing this. I didn't want them to think that. Now, unless they have some sort of technology where they can steal your thoughts from your mind, then that's the only way they would have really known about what I was planning. So
that's some bad news for you. There was an article out of the mainstream media about I think the New York police were trialing a machine where they could actually read people's minds out of a van.
Well, it's interesting you say that because there's a doctor in Sudbury, Dr. Michael Persinger. He's been on a lot of films and documentaries. He actually designed the God helmet. I'm not sure if you're familiar with that, but definitely some crazy technology. And apparently they took it away. He's not allowed to develop that anymore because it was so serious about reading people's minds. And they were essentially communicating with the computer screen with their minds, just their thoughts and moving objects on the screen and stuff like that. So it was pretty interesting.
Yeah, I remember a news piece here in New Zealand where they were trialing that technology on, children that were severely disabled, like in wheelchairs and things like that, so they could do their schoolwork just via their thoughts onto the computers and stuff like that. They were doing a trial on it. It was quite amazing. Yeah,
transhumanism is here, as they say. But, when I left on the March of Freedom, like you said, have I ever been stopped or has anybody tried to stop me? The first night I was walking out, a car swerved off the highway. It looked like it was trying to hit me because it definitely came off the road, off the white line that on the side of the road. I seen it veer off, and I heard the tires hitting the rocks on the shoulder of the highway. And when it got past me, it swerved back on the road and kept going. So that was the first time. But other than that, there was also my Facebook. It got taken down for about a week. That was right before I got to North Bay, I believe, or it was in North Bay when it happened. I can't recall exactly right now, but I didn't even do anything. I was I wasn't even mass posting or sending out tons of messages or anything like that. I simply added an administrator to a World Public Union in California because he was interested in becoming an administrator. So when you add an administrator to a group on Facebook, you have to type in your password and all that. And instantly I got a message saying that I was hacked and that my account was removed because for my own safety. And I was trying to get on, but the security protocols that they have where you have to guess people's pictures on there, they were showing cartoon images. They weren't showing real faces. I've documented it all on video. I have the whole experience on video because it is a reality show, and I try to document as much of it as I can. So that was pretty discouraging when they took my Facebook down because I wasn't able to connect with people that I would be going to see, or I couldn't line anything up. I couldn't send messages back to my family. I was lucky that I did start a backup Facebook profile prior to this. So I was using that, but I only had a couple hundred contacts on there. So there was definitely, it was definitely pretty hard to get through that. But I eventually did get through the security protocols and got my account back. And I haven't had any problems online since that I've noticed. But other than that, I'm just talking with people sometimes in the streets. You upset some people. They don't want to hear the truth. They have an agenda. They're part of that gatekeeper society, I guess you could call them. They're part of the local infrastructure that's keeping the control of the people. And one lady was going to hit me with a cane when she was arguing with me that there's no female Freemasons. And I told her to look up Order of the Eastern Star if she didn't believe me. And she refused to accept the truth that there are female Freemasons out there. So she was going to hit me with her cane as a result. And I told her if she wanted to hit me with her cane, she could go ahead. It's her own. If that's what she felt right to do, then go ahead. But before that, she was talking about God and religion and stuff. So, I mean, if she really was religious and really did have God in her heart, she wouldn't be wanting to hit somebody with a cane because he was trying to educate her on something. So
maybe she was a Canaanite.
Yeah. Maybe. You never know, right? But it's interesting, too, just going back to what you said earlier about slaves, how we're all slaves and stuff like that. A lot of people don't believe it. They think that we are free. But if you look back at history to Sumerian time, Canaanites, Babylon, Egypt, all these civilizations had kings and rulers ruling over the people. And the first king's list was documented as the Sumerian king list that could be found in, I believe it's the British Museum. And that's the oldest documented king list where there is a ruler over top of a community ruling, commanding people around. And the people were the blue-collar workers, the people that were keeping that community up. They were holding it up. They were doing the work to make sure that the community was continuing. And all of this under the leadership of a king or a ruler. And if you take a look at today's day and age, it seems very similar. We have politicians now who are supposed to be our representatives because they're representing our ideas and our voices. But we don't have that. They're not listening to the people. They want to continue the pyramid scheme. They want to continue their control over humanity and keep us as slaves. When we're born, our birth certificates have a number on that. That number puts us in the system. It allows us to have health care if needed. It allows us to get a bank account. It allows us to work to get a social insurance number or security number, depending where you live. So all these systems are designed to keep us down, to keep us contained within the matrix.
Yeah, and not to mention, apparently, if you look up that that shipping number on the birth certificate on the New York Stock Exchange, you'll find out how much you're worth. It's called being livestock.
Yeah, living stock. You're right. And we are living
this
stock.
This is a farm.
Yeah, human farm, human herd, as they call it. We've been herded like cattle, really, and while some parts of the world do have freedom and they do have, you know, they do have the enjoyment of going out without having to worry about being shelled or bombed or killed by a military or a corrupt government. Like in Canada, here it is. We are doing okay in that aspect. We don't have to worry about tanks in the streets and stuff like that, which is good. But at the same time, we're not really free. If we were truly free, then from birth, we wouldn't be put into this system. And we would have access to the basic fundamentals of human rights, really. And if you look at the United Nations Charter of Human Rights, I just actually interviewed on this journey somebody who worked for the United Nations. She was in Toronto, and after I did the interview with her, it was about a 36-minute interview. She told me to destroy the interview. She doesn't want me to publish it. She doesn't want me getting the information out to the people. And that's what I'm dealing with here. A lot of people don't want to be on video to talk about these things. A lot of people that I have talked to, like doctors and teachers, they are willing to come forward, but they realize that their security from their job or the connections they have with the society are at risk just by talking to me about this stuff. And that's
pretty sad.
Let me
see if I got this straight. I have information that shows that we're all slaves and that we're all going to be exterminated by a ruthless criminal sociopathic scumbaggery world government. But please don't share that information. Please don't tell people about it.
I know. And
because I know that I'm going to get exterminated, but I want to keep my job until that happens.
Yeah, it's...
Where's your priorities, yo?
I think if everybody blew the whistle, I think we'd be in a better place. Because once one starts, it's a domino effect. We're all going to be aware of what's going on, and that's what it's going to take. Whether you're working for the government or you're working for a bank or you're working for a corporation, we need to come forward with the truth about this stuff in order to advance as a civilization. We need to evolve. And the way the governments and corporations have it now is we're not evolving. There's a wall that's been put up and we can't get past that wall. We can't evolve any higher than what we are now, what some people would call peons or sheep or cattle. That's what we are. And we need to take back the leadership. We have so much potential as human beings to do much more than what we're doing now. And we could still live in a beautiful world where the technology is there, where we are working together in unity, and we could address the problems and actually solve these problems if that were the case. But there's a wall that's been built, and no one's allowed past it. As soon as you cross that wall, you'll be another William Cooper, Michael Hastings, RFK, JFK, MLK. All those names come to mind when I think about people who have stood up for human rights and were destroyed as a result of that, because these people do not want their secrets being released to the public. They do not want us coming together and working together, which is why they've smashed the mind of the human brain. They've They've shattered it into a million pieces, and they've caused divisions as a result. Conservative, liberal, communist, socialist, right, left, black, white, love, hate, all these divisions in the mind are meant to cause us to be separated and against each other. And when you boil it all down, we're all human beings. We're all the same. Like you said, we all bleed. We all require the same necessities for survival on this planet. But when your mind has been shattered like that, you look at other people like they're a threat or they're an enemy, when really we're our own enemies, really, if that's the way it's going to be. Our own decisions and our own thoughts and our own actions essentially is going to be what does cause the division. And if you realize this and you do work together with other people, the division won't be there. It will be unity. We are all one. And that's what I'm trying to promote on this as well.
Yeah. It seems like we're all operating under mind control, and CIA actually found out that repetition is one of the most simplest and most powerful forms of mind control. So if you want to use mind control against the New World Order agenda, speak the truth and speak it frequently and thoroughly all the frickin' time, and yeah, constantly reference the New World Order, constantly reference the debt-based slavery system. It's only once we are willing to say the truth as often as we possibly can that the system will be exposed. I mean, the Edward Snowdens and the Bradley Mannings of this world, they said something once, and look at what effect it has. And then they get punished extraordinarily largely for doing so, and imagine what effect that has on anybody else who might want to come out and speak the truth too.
Yeah, that's what's happening. They're using fear tactics. And you're right about the shattering of the mind. The CIA have realized this for quite some time. Dr. Ewan Cameron was doing psychic driving techniques here in Canada in an area where I'm going soon. He was drilling through repetition, where his patients would be sleeping with the headphones on, just drilling messages into their head night after night, and that repetition would cause them to believe certain things or change their viewpoints or change their lives, essentially. And that's what we're seeing on the media. That's what they're seeing on the commercials. That's what we're seeing on the radio, the music that's being played. It's always repetition, repetition, same song, same commercial, just psychic drive. That's what it's psychic driving techniques, for sure.
Yeah, and I see that same thing. It's like, one thing that I'd really want to do is go to a public meeting where there's hundreds, maybe even 1,000 people or whatever, and ask you, okay, raise your hand if you believe that you have never been under the influence of mind control of any kind. All right? And all the people that will raise their hand, I go, okay, now everybody else, you know who the mind control victims are.
Yeah. That's helpful, though, right? Those are the people that need help the most, are the ones who think that they're not controlled and they're not slaves and they're not under some form of mind control. It's pure propaganda what's going on. They use propaganda still to this day to instill values and beliefs in the individual, which is meant to cause divisions, really. They want to separate us. And one thing I've noticed, too, is locally on local levels, when there is a bunch of activists that are involved in the community, a lot of times they are against each other. They don't work together because of personal reasons, or they might have had a discrepancy between one or two of them at some point, so that's caused them to divide. When really what they were fighting for in the first place is the fundamental, most important thing that they should be worrying about. And when you do have skilled activists or people that are aware and stuff like that are separated, not working together, that's what they want. That's all part of their agenda. They want us to be divided. That's from Sun Tzu's Art of War, to divide and conquer.
We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen, with Mark Howitt from Canada.
Yeah. Yeah. And no one like me. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from New Zealand, the fabulously fluoridated and Fukushima irradiated island chained nation. And the radiation's good for the economy because now everybody snapped up a part time job as an energy saver light bulb, and there's enough mercury to sustain their power source as well. And my very special guest is Mark Howitt. Yeah, unfortunately, we've only got one more little segment with you, Mark, and I've really enjoyed this this conversation thus far. I'd like to do it again sometime. If we're actually going to beat this system, what are some of the let's just say I'm a stickler for profound things. You know, I don't like small little details and things like that. You know, I prefer the grandeur and the spectacle, you know, that kind of thing. And I was wondering if you've got any experiences whereby something has happened to you that is just totally amazing, that has actually really made an impression on you and kept you going all these years.
There's lots of things, really. Just learning about this stuff and being shocked myself about what's going on, that's been pretty profound. Just coming to realizations and piecing things together. But on this journey, it's been really good, too, to see people meet each other locally. Like they, two people that never met each other before are listening to the conversation, and they start talking after that. And that's a connection made. That's the unity coming into play. And I think that's what it's going to take, is for the individuals to change their ways themselves from within, and realize what's going on and feel powered rather than powerless, take back the control of their lives and have belief in themselves. Because a lot of people are walking around, they have no belief, they have no faith that this is ever going to change. They think that the world is doomed. They think that Armageddon is coming, which is all part of the New World Order plan. By the way, they want you to think that the end of the world is coming. They want you to prep and get your guns and become a survivor and be ready to shoot the next person that walks on your property. That's what they want. They don't want us coming together in peace and harmony and unity and changing this from within, really. They don't want us working together. They don't want us lobbying our politicians. They don't want us email bombing our politicians. They don't want anything like that. They want us to be divided. They want us to be against each other. And they want us to think that there is no hope for the human race. They want us to think that Armageddon is coming. The end times are coming. That's all their strategy. They're also playing this whole alien thing right now, where they're saying that there's aliens out there. They have information that they're going to finally release to the public. Well, who put out all this alien information? CIA, military intelligence. And I don't trust anything those guys say publicly anyways. So I think that's all has a part to do with it, too. In my personal opinion, I think we're the aliens. I think we came down here a long time ago looking for another place to live, like we are doing right now, looking for another place out there that would sustain life. And that's how we came here. And you see it on the pyramids. You see it on ancient tablets and scriptures, where it shows somebody coming down to the earth from another area, from a ship or something. You see this all over the pyramids and stuff. But they're telling you it's aliens. But these aliens look exactly like us. They have two legs, two arms, two eyes. They have a head. They look exactly like us. So I think all this alien stuff is just a way to also similar to the religious thing and God and putting your faith in something else and saying, oh, well, the aliens are going to save us. I think that's a big propaganda plot as well. That's just my personal opinion. I mean, I can't prove it, obviously, but it makes sense to me that they found all this ancient technology in the pyramids and all this stuff way back in the day. And that's kind of the theory I came up with along this journey, is with the in regards to the alien thing. So I have a strong belief that they're going to start they're going to keep promoting the alien agenda. And William Cooper was actually exposing this before he was killed. He was exposing that there is an alien agenda and stuff like that, that it will be coming into play. I think he was onto some things there, because at first he was talking about how the aliens are real and how he was working for military intelligence, but then he retracted that at a certain point. So I think he was starting to come on to the same conclusion almost, that there's something, there's an agenda behind all that. And the Roswell crash, all those UFOs and flying saucers we see are actually machinery developed by human beings, by the military industrial complex, stuff like that. I mean, when you see lights in the sky and stuff like that, we make lights. There's no denying that we have the technology to make a spaceship, because we have space stations right now up in space where people are working jobs up there. So I think we have to really question things that are being told to us by the government, military, CIA, the media, all those things. We really got to question that and figure out what their agenda is. And we could find the truth that way, I think.
My general rule is, If it comes from an official source, assume it's the exact opposite.
Yeah.
And you'll most likely wind up being correct. So government says comes out and it says, well, we're going to give new health funding or whatever. Or we're going to have universal health care to keep people healthy. Oh, okay, so they must be trying to kill everybody with that health care. Government comes out and says, we're going to implement these measures in order to keep everybody safe. Oh, okay, well, that means that they're probably going to implement all these surveillance measures and everything to keep us enslaved. You know, and so on and so forth. That's the general rule, isn't it?
Yeah, it seems like it. I made a couple documentaries. One is called The James Holmes Conspiracy, which many people have watched. It's probably the most popular film I've made. I also made Sandy Hook, the documentary. And what happened there was when I seen those things happen, when I seen those events happen, I was on the internet and trying to save as many of the news reports as I could from early on. Because once a story like that breaks, the media just flocks to the source to try to get the scoop, to try to get the first story, to try to make a breakthrough on the case or on the story. And afterwards, you'll see the same videos get deleted, get suppressed, the story changes. And then you start seeing the story that the media wants you to go. They'll lead you along the path want you to believe in. And then it becomes mainstream media saying the same story on all programs, on all stations. But when something like that happens, at the first time it happens, like right after it happens, is the most important time to be watching what's going on, because you'll eventually, you'll most likely find the truth in that time period. Because afterwards, it's like you said, they change the story, or they tell you what they want you to know about it. And that's, you have Project Mockingbird from the CIA, where they've infiltrated the media. You got Anderson Cooper, who was trained and bred by the CIA, working on CNN right now, who's telling everybody what's going on, and they're trying to deal with more taboo issues, like the cannabis episode. I've been told about it along this journey, that they recently discussed cannabinoids curing cancer and other illnesses. I mean, that's cool that they're talking about that. They do have an agenda there, and they're, I don't think they actually said that it cures it or it absolutely cures it or anything, but we all know, if you've watched Rick Simpson's Run from the Cure, or you've watched Cancer, the Forbidden Cures, that documentary with Renee Case, Huxley Therapy, Gerson treatment, there is tons of cures out there for these diseases, but they're holding them back so that they can hold these fundraisers like the Run for the Cure cancer, breast cancer awareness. All this stuff is massive, massive income being generated for the medical industry and whoever's putting on these programs. So they have the cures, but they're not giving it to us because they want us to be sick. They want to make profits from that, and that's what I see happening.
Mark, you just reminded me, in the springtime in New Zealand, we have all these daffodils sprouting up all over the place, and the Cancer Society of New Zealand has this day that they call Daffodil Day, where they've got all these volunteers out there giving people daffodils in exchange for donations, which they give to the major medical pharmaceutical companies who just promote chemotherapy, which has a 97% death rate.
Yep. Yeah,
I want to go out on Daffodil Day and start talking to these collectors and just say, do you know what part of a plan and scheme that you're actually in? And see what their reactions are, you know, get it all on camera.
That's a good idea.
We really got to push back against this this cancer industry and let people know that it really is an industry, and it's not designed to heal you. It's designed to kill you and, more importantly, drain any wealth that you manage to accumulate during your life.
Absolutely. That's what's going on. And I'm aware of it. You're aware of it. A lot of people are becoming more aware of this, which is good, because that's what it's going to take, is awareness so that we can address these issues. We have a sick care system. It's not a healthcare system. They only care if you're sick, and they can't cure themselves out of business, which is what's happening. If they did release the cure, they would go out of business, and they don't want that. It's a massive, massive industry. Cancer alone is a massive industry. I mean, I've talked to lots of people on this journey so far that have cured themselves of cancer using cannabinoids and other alternative, changing their diets, stuff like that. They just, massive turnaround rate when that happens. Once you learn the truth, the truth will set you free, and that's what I think is really important here, is the truth. just knowing about the propaganda and knowing about all the fuzziness and the static that they're throwing your way to dismantle your thoughts or whatever they're trying to do there. The truth is always the most important thing. And you got to like look at people that are actually curing themselves or that have cured themselves, the success stories, because you're right. The chemotherapy and the surgery and all these old methods of getting rid of cancer are outdated. We do have cures for these illnesses and they should be released to the public because we're not going to get better if they're not going to release the cure. And another thing is cannabis is illegal in most parts of the world. So if you get caught with marijuana, you get arrested, essentially, which is pretty sad that this amazing miracle plant is being suppressed all over the world because they know. And they've known all along that it cures this stuff. They don't want you to know about it. They don't want to tell you about it.
It's illegal to be cured of cancer.
Yeah.
Is that not the epitome of what's wrong with society?
Absolutely.
Mark, I want to thank you very much for coming on the show with me today. We've got about 10 seconds left. Quickly rattle off your website and then we're going to go.
Yeah, it's worldpublicunion.org. And if you want to get involved, just send over an email. And I want to show my shirt here. Right here. Some crimes can put you in jail, while others can put you in government.